ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Wednesday, October 17th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy hump day and hump month, Melody. Middle of the week, middle of the month.
There we go. I'm having so many different co-hosts lately. I'm getting... It is Wednesday. I had to remind myself. And we also have Wendy Wilson joining us today. And she's going to talk about something I've seen a lot of headlines about. And I was hoping that she would bring it and tell us all about this new disease that is popping up. And but first, let's go ahead and do the market report today. Gold, it's still trying to stay at that 1224 level. It was up a couple bucks, down a couple bucks. The high today was 1230, and now it's down a dollar at 1224. Same kind of day for silver, down 3 cents at $14.71. Platinum was down 8 at 836, and palladium was down 10 at 1,075. And there certainly was a lot of damage control trying to be done to these markets. I've seen, the president on TV more in the past, week, talking about the Fed and everything, along with Larry Kudlow. That's something I haven't seen. I remember Clinton used to do it. Every time the markets were down 2 points, he'd be on TV, making sure that it didn't go down any worse than those 2 points. But the Dow was up 0.50 today at 95.58, and crude oil was down 1.94, breaking through 70 at 69.98. And let's see, the paper markets today. The Dow was down 180 points at 25,617. The S&P, 2809, basically unchanged from yesterday. The NASDAQ, down 3 points at 7,642. And, of course, the markets fell. Yeah, they were down all day. They'd come back. It was very volatile today. And... And of course, the Fed is hinting at more rate hikes ahead, so we'll be talking about that here in the second break after Wendy Wilson joins us for this first segment. And let's see what some other market reports today. We have 10-year yield 3.18%, so that popped up 0.02. And let's see if there's anything else. Actually... perhaps I didn't update my looks. See, I went to a different screen and it shows that the Dow is only down 92 points, 25,706. So I'm revising that. And we'll go over these numbers in the second segment again today. So let's go ahead and bring on Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. And hello, Dave.
Hello, Herbal Queen.
Oh, yay. Well, we're going to talk about the new polio-like disease. I reported on this last week on the satellite network, so I thought we'd bring it forward to your listeners today. The CDC and other health authorities are tracking what appears to be a random case of rare types of polio called acute flaccid myelitis, or AFM. And at this point, there's speculation that the cause is from an enterovirus number 68 or enterovirus EVD68. Other experts state they really don't know what's causing people ages 5 months to 20 years of age, with the average age being 7 years old, to suddenly come down with what appears to be cold or flu symptoms, recover, and then the polio symptoms come in. Now, a question on a lot of people's minds, especially parents, is if the polio vaccine is the cause of this. Now, the CDC has been actually tracking this problem since 2014, but this is the first we're hearing about it. They've had 362 cases that have been reported in the United States, and unfortunately, no deaths. Other cases have cropped up in Australia, Canada, England, and other parts of the globe. So we're going to check out what, you know, this new health risk that seems to have stumped physicians worldwide. So according to the reports, patients, you know, have this cold or flu, they recover, they have congestion, and they get over it, and then they get the polio symptoms, which would be a lot of muscle weakness, numbness and tingling in the extremities, problems urinating, facial muscle weakness or drooping, eye movement problems, droopy eyelids, problems swallowing, slurred speech, paralysis, and they needing respiratory assistance through a ventilator with breathing problems. And of course, death is always a possibility. So what's really interesting, you guys, is that in September of 2018, the CDC posted on their website about these cases of rare polio. They said this condition is not new, but the increase in cases that we're starting to see since 2014 is new. We estimate 1 in 1 million people in the United States will get acute flaccid myelitis each year. So they're expecting that many people to get it. Now, according to previous reports, this is supposed to be kind of rare form of polio. So if more children are starting to contract it, there's got to be some common contributing factor. And we can rule out environment because cases are kind of occurring all across the United States. And if you go to the CDC's website, they have this graph charting this rare form of polio. And it's from 2014 to 2018. And it's really weird. The clusters are occurring in specific months, primarily August through October, but every other year. And that highly suggests a vaccine issue. Now, for those that are on the mailing list for the newsletter, Melanie, they get a picture of this graph so they can see what we're talking about. Okay?
Okay.
Now let's talk about the polio vaccine a minute, because according to the CDC, the polio vaccine is administered to children at 2, 4, 6, and 18 months, and then they get a booster at 4 to 6 years of age. And this is, they're also advised, doctors are advised to give the polio vaccine with other vaccine, including flu shots. So the onset of this rare polio is from 5 months, with the average age being 7 years old. The inflammation of the neurological system seems to kick in after they get their second vaccine at 4 months of age, and then a second round of the booster shots at age 6. So that's one big correlating factor. So why do some young adults, age 20 then, have been somewhat affected by this? Well, if they're traveling to areas of the globe that have polio rates, high polio rates, they're going to be required to get 2 booster shots before they get on the plane. The same booster would also be given to anyone that works in a laboratory dealing with pathogens, and also it would be required for anybody in healthcare working and treating patients. And the CDC really didn't report on the occupations of the young adults contracting this rare form of polio. Any questions yet?
Well, you said that, you know, this is kind of popping up everywhere across the United States, so you, mm-hmm. you kind of ruled out the environment. But what about the commonality of other countries? Are there, is
yeah.
there any relationship there?
Well, I didn't really show you in like Australia and Canada and the UK when those cases occurred. They just listed them as being there as well. So we didn't get to see that part of the scenario.
Was there any one more than one country where it was a little more active?
Nope. It's kind of just trickling in. So it's not blowing up anywhere specific yet. It's kind of just getting more and more common. But, you know, there is a history of polio vaccines having been recalled. The last one was October 2000, and it was recalled because, according to Pharmaceutical Journal, that vaccine was contaminated with other strains of polio viruses. So if they're culturing the virus on animal tissue, they run the risk of contracting different viral strains. And coincidentally, that's what medicine calls an enterovirus. So enterovirus 68 is a rare mammalian virus that occurs when polio vaccine is made from culturing it on animal tissue like monkey kidneys, or when they filter the serum through animal brains. So usually they use a mouse brain. So the polio vaccine often offers really no protection against any of these other strains, and it makes the people sick. So science has actually known about enteroviruses like 68 and EVD68 since the 1960s. And they know that these viruses can produce cold and flu-like symptoms, which in a minute I'll show you where they also are included. They also know that they cause polio and hand and foot and mouth disease. There are 5 species of enteroviruses, and science knows all about their genome and protein codes. They have a high level of mutation, and they invade your immune system controls, and they also have poisons that attack your nervous system. Often, science includes enteroviruses within the DNA vaccines. Science says it includes them to stimulate a better immune system response. One major DNA vaccine is the influenza vaccine now given to children with their polio vaccines at 6 months and 6 year boosters for polio. So another correlating factor that fits the mystery of why this is supposedly a new polio disease. What do you think?
Well, it is really interesting because polio was basically, eradicated from the United States, and mm-hmm. now we're seeing this, something come back, and I agree that, you hear so much talk about these vaccines and everything, mm-hmm. but does the vaccine help at all? I mean, does the vaccine prevent, the polio vaccine prevent? Because it was a very common, and I was in a child, I was in hospital with, many of the kids that had polio and so forth. So I knew a lot of kids that had polio.
Right. Well, according to Dr. Anthony Norris, now the late Dr. Anthony Norris, he said vaccines don't prevent any diseases. They don't help you create antibodies. And that's the point we're told we're given them, is for us, our bodies, to make antibodies, but our bodies don't make antibodies on artificial infections, he said. It bypasses all the protocols that the immune system relies on to get information about the pathogen to make an antibody. So what's in it, when it's injected into the bloodstream, your system thinks it's supposed to be there. Yeah. So, it's kind of a quandary. Who do you believe? What do you believe? Now, according to Infectious Disease Advisor, having a live polio vaccine can produce a vaccine-related poliomyelitis. It can give you polio, is what they're saying. It's supposed to be a rare occurrence, and it can occur if you get the oral polio. And it would appear that medical science is creating rare polio epidemics when they're combining viruses, especially in vaccines. And this may ring a bell. This is how they created the deadly pandemic called Spanish flu. But they've, evolved their technique a bit because there's no profits you can be made on dead people. So they've evolved the vaccines, and now the assaults are a little more subtle. So here's what happens when you get this this myelitis or this polio-like problem. This is from the CDC. Although AFM is like polio, there's really no vaccine to prevent it, and treatment involves neurological treatments, high doses of steroids for inflammation, and physical therapy. So they're going to get a new patient for a long, long time. Did anybody hear about the sports, the baseball stars, the pro baseball players that got infected when they volunteered at a sports camp this summer? Did you hear about that?
I don't recall, Wendy.
Well, several professional baseball players that volunteered at the 2018 Summer Grand Slam Baseball Camp for 200 children in Minute Maid Park, Houston, Texas, they came down with hand, foot, and mouth disease. The ages of the children that attended were 4 through 18 years of age. Astros relief pitcher Brad Peacock was the third case to come down with the disease. Also affected were pitchers Noah Snydergaard with the Mets and J.A. Happ with the Yankees. These pro ball players were put on a 10-day disabled list, and it can be common to acquire the disease in the company of young children, especially after they've been vaccinated with polio and you're sharing baseball equipment or signing autographs. So enteroviruses are linked to hand, foot, and mouth disease, as is polio in the vaccines, because they're cultured again on those animal tissues that contain the enteroviruses. So this is really a no-brainer. But medicine is projecting a story that the disease is common in warmer months, but it has nothing to do, they say, with the polio vaccine. So what the public is unaware of is that polioviruses are cross-reactive with enteroviruses, which do not have to contaminate a vaccine even. So the enterovirus, like EV71, is especially connected with hand, foot, and mouth disease, and other diseases can make anyone that's vaccinated with polio a big target for neurological complications when they are come in contact with these other viruses. So scientific medicine knows there's this risk, but they now are having an increased risk, so they're trying to figure out a way to, you know, keep you from getting panicked about it, that you may contract a neurological illness because you got a polio vaccine. So anyone vaccinated with a virus that is shedding off the disease is going to be contagious for 2 weeks, and this is how the baseball pros at the camp were infected.
Hmm. Isn't hand-foot disease, isn't that from beef?
It's supposed to be from cattle.
Cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same as mad cow disease?
No.
I can't. That is totally different.
It's not a prion disease. It's a different animal, basically, in a disease species. But here's a quote for Clinical Vaccine Immunology. They said this in September 2011. They said, almost every human has been immunized with poliovirus in childhood. However, how this specific vaccination will influence other pathogenetics in other enterovirus infections and in clinical outcomes remains elusive. They have no idea. It's a one big question mark for them. So plausible deniability is another way of putting it.
Yeah, of course.
So basically it appears, let's recap, the polio vaccine can increase the risk of polio or rare polio or other neurological conditions when it's contaminated with other viruses called enteroviruses made when the vaccine is made with animal tissues, or the polio is cross-reactive with enteroviruses, especially your DNA vaccines like influenza, which increases your risk of getting the polio neurological disease, and anyone vaccinated with a viral vaccine is contagious and sheds the virus for 2 weeks. So you know, and when you look at that chart and you see those months and every other year, what's happening is kids are getting vaccinated before school starts in August, and then they're getting their flu shot through October, and this is where those spikes are happening on that chart.
Fairly interesting. Coincidence?
I don't believe in those.
Yeah, me neither. Nope.
So, well, people need to just be aware, do their homework before they do, you know, anything, you know, therapeutic. I would just, you know, beef up your immune system, use good hygiene, because lots of books have been written on immune system strengthening, and good hygiene is what got rid of a lot of these childhood diseases even before vaccines were created.
Hey, give us your contact info real quick, Wendy.
Okay, 866-229-3663, thepowerherbs.com. See you guys next time.
All right, appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Thank you. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back right after these few short commercials. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I've been talking too much today. My throat's getting a little hoarsey there. I'm getting a little bit of frog in there. And visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And we're continuing the special today, $440 for a $25 face value, 90% silver, and they are 50-cent pieces, along with the 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle. It includes your shipping cost, $440. So that's a great buy, and I encourage you to buy some. You can buy one or many of them. We have lots of other products. We have some, the $20 gold pieces are always a great buy at this time. The premiums are low. In-state 64 $20 gold pieces were running $140 more than what a Gold Eagle bullion coin was. So, just incredible low premiums again. And we're just waiting for the markets to turn, and we know they will. You know, it's all cycles and it's timing, and there's a lot of moaning and groaning going on there out there about the Federal Reserve increasing rates, Dave. And it's it always amazed me. Everybody knew. This has been going on for what? When was the first time they said they were going to start raising rates? 2015, the end of 2015.
2015,
yeah. So it's not shocking. It's not new. And the statements from Janet Yellen was, "Hey, we got to raise rates so we can lower them for the next recession," which I'd always just kind of tickled by funny bone. But We're first going to talk a little bit about mortgage apps. They fell 7.1% last week, and this was according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. The volume was 15% lower compared with the same week 1 year ago. We've seen rates move 22 basis points higher in the past 4 weeks, and they've jumped 96 points in the past year, and that is the applications to refinance a home loan. And that fell 9% for the week, and we're 33.5% lower than a year ago, Dave.
Yeah, the average contract interest rate for 30-year fixed mortgage rates with conforming loan balances of $453,000 or less increased to its highest level since February of 2011 to 5.1%. That's up from 5.05%. A couple of weeks before. Treasury rates increased over the week, mainly as communication from the Fed pointed to a continued path of rate hikes, a topic we'll get to in a little bit in more detail. And home buyer demand is strong, but affordability is weakening and has been even before rates began to rise, as the tight supply pushed home prices sharply higher. We've reported on that frequently in the last few months. Now, the combination of higher prices and rising rates is clearly throwing cold water on the heat in the housing market earlier this year.
And you know, you have home building that dropped more than expected in September, as construction activity in the South fell by the most in nearly 3 years. And of course, that might have been held down by Hurricane Florence, but you know, it's not going to be much better next month as we have Hurricane Michael. You don't know what type of an impact that might have, but housing starts fell 5.3%, and that's out from the Commerce Department. Starts in the South, that accounts for the bulk of the home building, tumbled 13.7% last month. And of course, this was the biggest decline since October of 2015.
Yeah, now the housing market has really been a weak spot in an otherwise reported robust economy. You know, you talk about Hurricane Florence and Michael. At some point in the next year, you're going to see a local housing boom in places like Mexico Beach, Florida, which were virtually obliterated.
I know, it's horrible.
Some of the drone photos coming in this week are just really breathtaking in the sheer destruction, complete destruction of these neighborhoods. But, you know, again, you know, economists are blaming the sluggishness on rising mortgage rates. You know, and they've combined with higher house prices to make purchasing unaffordable for a lot of first-time home buyers. Single-family home building, which accounts for the largest share of the housing market, decreased just slightly below 1% last month. You know, and that's continued to lose momentum since hitting almost a million units last November, and that was the strongest then in 10 years. But a survey yesterday showed confidence among single-family home builders rising in October so far, but builders said housing affordability has become a challenge due to ongoing price and interest rate increases.
Well, my buddies were on CNBC, I think, today. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross said today that the U.S.-China trade talks are on hiatus. How about that? Ross noted that in any negotiation, there are ups and downs, but some suggested that talks that had entered in an inactive period. He said he didn't know what he would call it. He thinks he would call it a continued impasse, but he says we are here. We are where we are. That's comforting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Dave, but
it is what it is.
It is what it is. But given the tit for tat tariffs between China and us over the past several months, when we were talking and now we're not, I think people tend to see that breakdown as a hiatus.
Yeah, you know, on Sunday, your other BFF, Larry Kudlow, the president's chief economic advisor, said the relationship between us and China had not been positive lately. Gosh, a new captain obvious. But, you know, in all sincerity, American and Chinese officials have suggested that the leaders of the two countries may be able to step it up at the upcoming G20 summit in Argentina. But asked about that possibility, Secretary Ross suggested it was unlikely that much would be accomplished there. Melody.
Well, you know what, though? Whenever you have these, you know, advisors or you know, a cabinet head come out and say, well, you know, things aren't going too well and blah, blah, blah. In a couple of days, Trump will come out and make an announcement that things are made. It was done with NAFTA. It was done with a lot of the other little things I noticed. It's like you get these reports, they'll come out and say, well, you know, things aren't going well and you know, perhaps there's issues and so forth. And a couple of days later, we'll get the good news that, you know, hey, it's all been taken care of. So,
yeah, some of it may be random, but, you know, I think, you know, with, you know, more recently, I think it could be a, you know, a good cop, bad cop thing. Bad cop, let's lower expectations. Good cop, let's announce progress on, you know, this or a deal on that. So anyway,
there's some observers are saying that as China's power has grown in recent years, so too has the risk of war with the United States. Under President Xi Jinping, China has increased its political and economic pressures on Taiwan and built military installations on the coral reefs in the South China Sea. And that has fueled D.C.'s fears that the Chinese expansionism is going to threaten the U.S. allies and influence in the region. So you have U.S. destroyers have transited the Taiwan Strait to loud protests from Beijing. You have American policymakers have wondered aloud whether they should send an aircraft carrier through the strait as well. You have the Chinese fighter jets. They've intercepted U.S. aircraft in the skies above the South China Sea. And then you have President Trump has brought long simmering economic disputes to a rolling boil. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, a war between the two countries does remain unlikely from all, you know, looks of things, but the prospect of military confrontation resulting from a Chinese campaign against Taiwan, you know, no longer seems as implausible as it once did. And the odds of such a confrontation going nuclear are being said to be higher than most policymakers and analysts think. Members of China's strategic community tend to dismiss concerns like that. Likewise, U.S. studies of a potential war with China often exclude nuclear weapons from the analysis entirely, treating them as basically irrelevant to the course of a conflict. Asked about the issue in 2015, for example, Dennis Blair, who's former commander of U.S. forces in the Indo-Pacific region, estimated the likelihood of U.S.-Chinese nuclear crisis as, quote, somewhere between nil and zero, unquote. However, if the Pentagon's preferred style of conventional warfare were to be deployed against China, well, some are saying that could be a potential recipe for nuclear escalation. And here's why.
Yeah, the U.S. signature approach to war has been fairly simple since the end of the Cold War. You know, they will punch deep into enemy territory, try to rapidly knock out the opponent's key military assets, usually at a minimal cost, so we're told. But the Pentagon developed this formula in wars against Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Serbia, but none of which had nuclear power. So China not only has nuclear weapons, but it has also intermingled them with its conventional military forces. And of course, it makes it difficult to attack one without attacking the other. So what this means is that a major U.S. military campaign targeting China's conventional forces, of course, would likely also threaten the nuclear arsenal. So, and faced with such a threat, Chinese leaders could decide to use their nuclear weapons while they were still able to do. So, you know, as the U.S. and Chinese leaders sort of navigate a relationship mutual suspicion, they have to come to grips that with the fact that a conventional war could skid into a nuclear confrontation. Now, again, this risk might not be high. Its consequences for the region and the world would be devastating, as any nuclear war, even with North Korea or anyone. It would be devastating for the world.
Indeed. You know, interesting strategy, thinking along, you know, the lines of the Chinese intermingling its conventional and nuclear missiles. But hey, as long as the U.S. and China continue to pursue their current grand strategies, the risk is likely to endure. You know, dominance comes with consequences. You know, it means that leaders on both sides, you know, ought to dispense with the illusion that they can easily fight a limited war. Hopefully, any thought of that currently on both sides is limited. But the military leaders should focus instead on, you know, managing the political, economic, and military tensions that might lead to a conflict in the first place. Georgetown University professor Caitlin Talmadge believes that neither side may see much value in peacetime reassurance. In fact, quite the opposite, she says. They may be courting instability. If this is the case, she continues, then the threat of escalation may make war less likely, but it also makes it radically more dangerous if it does break out. This sobering reality should encourage leaders on both sides to find ways of resolving, you know, whatever disputes we may have without resorting to a war that could rapidly turn catastrophic, both in that region and across the earth. Melody.
Well, you know, today the Fed released its October meeting minutes, and, you know, the markets were, you know, waiting for them to release their, I don't know if they really said too much difference, did they? You know, they released last month's meetings, and the minutes read, with regard to the outlook for monetary policy beyond this meeting, participants generally anticipated that further gradual increases in the target range for the federal funds rate would most likely be consistent with a sustained economic expansion, strong labor market conditions, and inflation near 2% over the median term.
Yeah, policymakers discussed what the future path would be, as, you know, listeners will recall, with members saying there might be a period where the Fed even will need to go beyond normalization of rates and into a more restrictive stance. You know, that would be to control inflation from overshooting the Fed's target of 2% and to address the risk posed by significant financial imbalances. You know, last month's meeting in late September occurred before the recent surge in stock market volatility. You know, the one that coincided with remarks from Fed Chair Jerome Powell that the Fed remains a good distance away from reaching an equilibrium, indicating more increases are ahead, namely at their December meeting. The minutes also referred, and this is really the only new thing that I picked up, that, you know, referred to the tariffs on aluminum and steel, which were cited as reducing new investment in the energy sector. But I think what is new is reports of some things that Powell said after last month's meeting that, you know, we may have missed. Melody.
Yeah, Dave, one of the things that wasn't in the Fed's meetings is really a staggering admission that was made by Powell in last month's meeting that is just now coming out. His admission is that the Fed is going to hike rates until something breaks. And when I say breaks, I don't mean stocks falling 5%. I'm talking about a full-scale crisis like 2008. So, and you know, and that's the whole point why they're raising rates, is because they know this great break is coming like 2008. And if you think I'm being dramatic here, consider that Powell explicitly stated this during the question and answer session following the Fed's last meeting. He said, "I think either a significant and lasting correction in financial markets or a slowing down in the economy that's inconsistent with our forecasts, those are the kinds of things that we'd react to." And when pressed for what would be considered significant, Powell replied, "Something that would impact consumption, and that means consumer spending." And we're going to be heading into a break right now. We'll see if we can finish this up when we come back. So please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen.
Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I think that's the first time in 25 years I almost messed up the telephone number. It was just one of those days, ladies and gentlemen. So, Dave,
it was just that momentary hesitation that I wondered.
Don't give
out your cell number. Come on.
I don't think anyone noticed but me, probably. So maybe you, but. But anyway, 1-800-375-4188. It certainly does feel like the middle of the week. It's hard to believe that October, we're halfway through the month of October, and it's next month is Thanksgiving. Truly, just mind-boggling how fast this time goes by. But so, ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy every single day, and be
life
thankful.
Life is short. Live it up.
Life is short. Be blessed. Know your blessings, and be thankful for your family and friends and your little doggies. Your little doggies. Anyway, let's go on. Let's see if we had anything else to say about Powell. He says hikes are going to continue until something breaks.
Here's what I think he was saying, Melody. I mean, he's stating that the Fed isn't going to stop hiking rates unless stocks collapse for a long period of time to the point that it impacts consumer spending. You know, we're not talking about a garden variety stock market correction of 10% here either. No. You know, we're talking about a financial crisis, some other dramatic event that it catches the attention of the average American and makes us change our spending plans. You know, keep that in mind, folks, in the coming months as the Fed continues to raise rates and help the paper markets into its coming tailspin. And as we always preach, prepare for that by buying more gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver today. Again, 1-800-375-4188. Melody.
You know, we hear a lot that the Fed is doing this against the president, against the administration, you know, for the agenda that they might have and so forth and whatnot, and that rates shouldn't be raised and we should continue on the way. And, you know, why should everyone get free money? You know, it doesn't really benefit. You have to raise those rates. Dave, am I wrong? I mean, if everything is so good, then rates would be just an automatic increase. But it's going to kill us because the servicing of the debt's going to kill us. You know, the consumers are going to get hurt by it and so forth. So we get that. But how long do you stay at zero rates?
Well, here's what you know, if past is prologue to any extent, you know, if a recession comes, you know, sooner than later, as we believe it will, and interest rates are, you know, 2.5, maybe even 3% at the time, and a stock market crash, we'll call it, comes calling big, and the economy starts to go into a tailspin, and, you know, in fact, we'll call it a deep recession, the Fed's not going to have nearly as much room to move in a monetary sense as it did 10 years ago when rates were, you know, at or slightly above 5%. What's going to happen as a result is that Congress, now whether, you know, they will or not, is going to depend on when the recession occurs, who's president, who owns the House and Senate. They're going to have to increase spending. I mean, you think they're calling for, you know, deficits now of, you know, in excess of $1 trillion for the foreseeable future. Boy, you know, remember that $1 trillion infrastructure plan that was talked about 2 years ago? Going to have to be, you know, maybe 50% more than that. Additional tax cuts, hopefully more targeted this time, more effectively targeted. But if you think debt is bad now, ladies and gentlemen, wait till the next recession, because I don't think the Fed is going to have the wherewithal to, you know, put a big wrench into the downfall again as it did during the great financial crisis. So Congress is going to be left with the bag, and you know, if the politics won't permit some kind of consensus decision making, then oh, look out, global crash. Things are going to be every bit as bad, if not worse, than folks like David Stockman have been saying for all of 2018.
And I think it is going to be very severe. I don't think anybody can appreciate it, because I think going into the 2008 Great Recession, I mean, we were pretty spot on until they started pulling the dollar out of the tank in about 2010. And I mean, at that point, I remember very clearly, I mean, there was a lot of discussion about replacing the dollar at that point in time, because it basically was in free fall there for a while. Things are so much different now, and it will be worse. It will be worse this time around than the last time. So, and because they didn't do anything to fix anything. I heard today, I didn't have a chance to follow up, that President Trump was going to ask all his department heads that everyone needed to cut back by 5%. Is that possible?
No. No, it is not. We can spend a whole segment on why that's the case, but the fact of the matter is that so little of federal budget is non-defense discretionary spending. Now, you know, if Trump asked the DOD to do that as well, well, that's somewhat of another thing. But so much of the budget is mandatory spending: Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and other mandatory programs that make it. I mean, it's just easier said than done. It's an oversimplification, I believe, at best, to give that kind of directive when getting to that. Say, if the president, his administration, is looking for an aggregate 5% cut in spending for next year, they're going to have to go about it a different way. And what it means, if that's really a target they hope to achieve, you know, they're going to have to hit hard on entitlements, but also discretionary spending would have to be greater than 5% to reach an overall reduction of 5% spending. So that's my take.
So really the only area they could go into would be the entitlements, and that's what they've been wanting to do all along anyway. So when you say we're going to have a nice little 5% across the board cut,
it could be done.
You don't have to say we're cutting entitlements. We're just going to have a 5% cut.
It can be done. I mean, you eliminate this the social safety net. hallelujah. There you go.
But they're going to have to start cutting someday soon. I mean, this is going to have to be done. Or will it be done just automatic? I mean, will it be done by...
Well, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, Melody, but here's the thing. It's not going to happen. Now, there will be some temper. I mean, they've tried. They've tried numerous times in the past few decades. There's a Budget Control Act from earlier this decade that, both houses agree to waive. each time there's some kind of, appropriations crisis. I mean, it can be done. It just, I don't believe there's the political wherewithal in Washington today. You've got special interests for virtually every stinking line item of the federal budget. And until we reform, I think the way to achieve this is through reform of our governmental processes that, once and for all, takes big money out of politics.
Yeah.
Big corporate money, big high net worth money, big union money, that's the way to our future. Unfortunately, it's our elected people who've boxed themselves in a corner. That makes us all the rest of us 300 million plus citizens suffer.
So with all those special, to me, those special interests and lobbyists and multinational corporate, to me, that's the swamp.
I agree with you.
That's the swamp. And, but unfortunately we have the politicians that, live in the swamp, live with the swamp. And so, all right, so again, we're just at this point in time where what's to be done? So it's all just going to be covered up. It's all just going to be, everybody's just going to go along their little path or little road. Nothing's going to change until something makes it change. And when that happens, it's not going to be pleasant. People are going to lose a lot of their savings, all their retirement accounts, anywhere from, heck, even Wall Street talks about a 50. Powell talks about a 50% retracement or more. So why, 60-70% people are going to lose unless they have gold and silver. And let's talk about something a little bit different. I do want to touch on before we go, and then we're going to do your brevities, Golden. The last of the four non-bank financial companies to bear the label systemically important had won relief from stricter regulatory oversight. And the government's Financial Stability Oversight Council, which is a group of market and bank regulators, of course, has removed the designation for Prudential Financial. So what this move means is that Prudential won't be subject to the costs of heightened regulation as a too-big-to-fail institution. So that's something it and the other companies have fought since being categorized as such since 2008. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said in a statement for the council that the decision follows extensive engagement with the company and a detailed analysis showing that there is not a significant risk that the company could pose a threat to financial stability. But didn't they loosen those regulations and those...
they did that affect the quote smaller institutions, but this is virtual BS, folks. I can't think of any other way to do it. And just talking about lobbyists and special interest influence, here you go again.
Yep.
These banking lobbyists. Oh my gosh, just. And Prudential isn't even the first among those four or five non-banks to lose the too big to fail designation. Last year, the panel removed that designation for AIG, American International Group, the big insurance company that almost, you know, that was partly responsible for bringing the country to its knees thanks to, you know, its billions of dollars of derivative products. General Electric's GE Capital, they got rid of it the year before that. Now, they, to their, not necessarily to their credit, I think it was out of financial, you know, reality for the severe drop in GE stock price, they remade their operations and sort of sold off GE Capital. MetLife, that was another one. They won their battle in court. You know, as we reported in recent weeks, the Too Big to Fail label was created in response to the financial crisis era failure of Lehman Brothers. It was meant to identify non-banks whose failure could threaten the financial system, every bit as how the big banks themselves could and can. You know, put these companies under Fed oversight, prompting, you know, the four companies we just mentioned to immediately try to shrink their operations to shake it off. And it looks as though they've succeeded. Now, if we can only get them to stop their very risky financial practices.
1-800-375-4188. We didn't get to the brevity is golden. Maybe we can save that. Maybe.
It's a timely subject. We could do it. We can do it next week.
Okay.
How about it.
Okay. Or maybe I can get you to join me on Friday for my 20 minutes because we have James Corbett for the rest of the program.
I'm there you go.
So I'm looking forward to talking to James Corbett. And I believe Butch Poland is coming back tomorrow. So make sure you tune in tomorrow. And until then, ladies and gentlemen, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you,
Dave. Welcome back, Rev. Bye-bye, Melody.
Bye.
Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.